Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining Cromwell European REIT Results Teleconference. All participants have been placed in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. I will now hand over the line to Elena, the Chief Operating Officer and Head of Investor Relations at Cromwell EREIT Management. Elena, please go ahead.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here at Cromwell European REIT, our series briefing and teleconference on the financial results for the fourth quarter and full year ended 31st of December 2019. Apologies for starting a little bit late. We had quite a number of people dialing in. Before I proceed, I also want to say that due to the COVID-19 situation, we don't have our European team with us here in the room. They sent their best wishes. Now I will move on to introducing our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Simon Garing, and Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Shane Hagan, who will be doing the presentation today. Simon will first share series FY 2019 report card before going into the portfolio performance and developments. Thereafter, Shane will give us an overview of the REIT's financial results and treasury management updates. Simon will then conclude the presentation, and we will start the Q&A session. Simon, over to you.
Thanks, Elena, and good morning to everyone. We'll start off at slide five. As you know, CREIT's stated purpose is to deliver stable and growing distributions and long-term DPU and NAV growth. As the first Singapore-listed REIT with a diversified pan-European portfolio, CREIT offers the opportunity to invest in an income-producing, diversified pan-European commercial real estate portfolio. We are diversified across asset classes, geographies, tenant customers, and trade sectors, investing in predominantly freehold property. Cromwell takes a proactive approach to asset management, acquisitions, and divestments, as well as appropriate and responsible capital management. We are gladly backed by our sponsor, the Australian-listed Cromwell Property Group, an integrated asset manager with on-the-ground and experienced teams in 20 offices across 12 European countries. On slide six, you will see a montage of some of our assets, including the assets that we acquired last year, such as Paraseine in Paris and Green Office in Kraków in Poland, and one of the assets we're in the midst of acquiring, Bretten in Germany. We are happy to provide more information on our assets in our corporate data pack. On slide seven, it demonstrates that CREIT is currently trading at a 7.1% annualized distribution yield in line with its net tangible asset value, which makes it very attractive as compared to the S-REIT sector index average yield of 5.1%. Unitholders received around 32% in total returns in 2019 in combination of both unit price increases and dividends, outperforming the FTSE Straight Times REIT Index, one of the manager's key targets. CREIT's distribution yield is between 2 percentage points to 6 percentage points higher than that offered by other global and Singapore yield investment products. CREIT now has a market cap of about 1.5 billion euros. With around 30% owned by Cromwell Group, this leaves a very high free float now of close to 1 billion euros. We have been very active in our engagement with the market since IPO, and this is reflected in our enhanced unitholder register and industry recognition of Cromwell Group. Let's move to slide eight. Since IPO, we've added to CREIT's portfolio 30 high-quality assets at attractive yields, representing an almost 50% increase in CREIT's portfolio. Following upward revaluations of the IPO properties, plus the onboarding of newly acquired properties and the disposal of one non-core asset, CREIT's portfolio was 103 properties valued at close to 2.1 billion euros at year-end. We are also in the midst of acquiring three freehold assets in Germany, previously announced. As part of our recycling strategy, we also initiated the sale of 12 non-strategic properties, which will also settle this quarter. This places CREIT in a good position to continue leveraging Cromwell's extensive on-the-ground teams to source for other accretive acquisition opportunities and capitalize on core Western European logistics and gateway city offices. If we can turn to slide 10, which is our report card for 2019. We are pleased to have delivered yet another quarter of operational outperformance, our eighth consecutive reporting period of exceeding IPO forecasts, creating a worthy track record. Both NPI and distributable income are well above both last year and the IPO forecast, due in the most part to new acquisitions. Pleasingly, on a like-for-like basis, our 2018 portfolio delivered 3% like-for-like NPI growth in 2019. FY 2019 DPU, 0.0408, representing a 1.5% outperformance against the original IPO forecast. Shane will also speak to the balance sheet and debt profile, but I want to highlight the attractive cost of debt, which we have mostly locked in versus our higher property yields. On a portfolio level, our local teams have proactively engaged our tenant customers and conducted active leasing programs, increasing CREIT's portfolio occupancy to 93.2%, up from the year ago of 90.8% and above the IPO forecast target for the end of last year. During the year, we achieved rental growth with a positive rent reversion of 3.7%, well above inflation, reflecting the portfolio's characteristics and qualities. This re-leasing helped to increase the valuation of our assets, with a valuation gain recorded of 42 million euros during the year. As shown on slide 11, last year, we acquired 14 freehold properties in strategic markets for just over 365 million euros on just over 7% yield. Over the course of the year, the valuations of these properties have also increased. This demonstrates our ability to source assets off-market at attractive prices below valuation, and then onboard and to add value to the properties. We initiated our first acquisition in Germany since IPO, and these properties will settle at a 6.2% net operating income yield on 15-year lease. We divested a light industrial property in Paris and will settle shortly on 12 remaining industrial logistics properties in Netherlands, France, and Denmark at a premium of about 12%-15% to their purchase prices. This continues the strategy of recycling assets which no longer fit our risk-return profile. Last year, we successfully executed a 150 million euro private equity placement, which was oversubscribed and well supported by regional and global long-only institutional investors, property specialist funds, and family office and private wealth clients. This has helped us to achieve a six-fold increase in liquidity since IPO, bringing CREIT closer to major index inclusions. Slide 12 demonstrates that Cromwell is committed to having a best practice approach to environmental, social, and governance matters, or ESG. As most of you would know, we've achieved a 43% year-on-year increase in CREIT's rating on the GRESB assessment. This achievement attests to our continuing commitment to upholding high ESG standards in all business activities conducted. In addition, CREIT was awarded an A grade in the GRESB public disclosure assessment, notably higher than the average grade of B of other Singapore-listed peers. As part of our best practice approach, the key performance indicators, or KPIs, of myself and the senior management team are closely tied to specific ESG targets, something I believe is still unusual in Singapore. We also engage with key identified stakeholder groups, including investors, unitholders, tenant customers, and the community, addressing more than 1,000 investors and raising CREIT's profile among potential investors at four major investor forums. Elena has had to purchase a number of new shoes because of the leather she's wearing out. We also engage our tenant customers frequently, and a recent survey shows that CREIT's tenant customer satisfaction improved by 5 percentage points to 69% in FY 2019. Our strong sustainability foundation, as well as the progressive portfolio and asset management practices, will help CREIT to excel as a leader in our field. Turning to slide 14, We maintain a highly diversified portfolio, balancing a mix of predominantly office and light industrial or logistics assets. The portfolio's total net lettable area now spans approximately 1.5 million square meters across seven European countries, and approximately 92% of the portfolio is freehold or continuing leasehold properties. CREIT's portfolio also has a favourable weighted average lease expiry profile of 4.4 years, as well as an average portfolio reversionary yield of 6.7%, according to assessments by our independent valuers. This is well in excess of our current passing NPI yield. Turning to slide 15, since listing, the valuation of CREIT's portfolio has increased by around 145 million euros, or 7.4%, compared to the aggregate purchase price. In 2019 alone, we registered a valuation fair gain of 42.4 million. This was driven by our asset management team's success in repositioning assets, actively marketing or executing asset enhancement initiatives, which is achieving higher rental income and a reduction in vacancies. The slight cap rate compression in our valuation was due mainly to these factors, while the German logistics is extremely well bid in the market, supporting the 31% increase in valuation. Our static Italian valuation reflects a 1 year shorter lease to expiry of our largest tenant, the Italian government. Turning to slide 16 for an update on our lease expiry profile, we're pleased that more than 120,000 square metres of NLA have been leased in 2019 at an average positive rent reversion of 3.7%. We constantly look for opportunities to de-risk the portfolio and lease income by actively renewing and extending leases. So close to 60% of leases subject to expiries and breaks until June 2020 have already been de-risked as at December 31. And further leasing momentum continues. Moving to slide 17 to highlight some of the key leasing successes over the past year. In the Netherlands, National Nederlander, the key tenant customer of our large Hagsupport asset, renewed their lease with a lease term of 5.7 years, while also taking more space, expanding to a total of 22,000 square metres, almost half the size of the property, bringing the occupancy rate to 100%. We also recorded positive leasing outcomes in our Danish light industrial portfolio, increasing the occupancy rate by almost 13 percentage points, up to 86% from 73% at the end of 2018. Very pleasing result. In France, we also recorded leasing success in Parc de Dock, after we ramped up the marketing of the asset after the conclusion of our discussions with the French government on their expropriation, which is obviously no longer continuing. A total of over 15,000 square metres of space was leased up in this strategic asset, with a 5.8% increase in the average passing rent per square metre to now 119 euros a square metre, with new leases now setting benchmarks at 150 euros a square metre. We remain very optimistic on this strategic Parisian site. As you can see on slide 18, the fourth quarter was more active with regards to leasing compared to the previous quarter. We signed 45 leases compared to 28 new leases in the previous quarter with much larger area. This has driven occupancy to 93.2%, up from 92% as at September 30, with the light industrial sector being the main driver behind the increase. Again, to reiterate, this is well above the stated IPO target occupancy of 92.6% at the end of last year. We achieved rental growth across the portfolio with a reversion rate of 1.9% for the fourth quarter alone. In particular, the light industrial portfolio recorded a positive rent reversion of 6.1% in the quarter, but this was partially offset by the office portfolio's small negative reversion rate of 1.5%. Again, the barbell strategy of our portfolio construct balances the strong credit provided by office tenants with the income growth potential of our logistic assets. Note that our Finland portfolio saw occupancy slightly decline, but still remains above our acquisition underwrite and budget. Although the COVID-19 virus has had minimal impact in Europe to date, our property manager has instigated precautionary measures and will continue to be proactive as we monitor the situation. Our office sector remains stable, with occupancy of 94.6% holding to similar IPO levels. You can see on the table a few more details. The acquisitions in France and Poland contributed to an improved rate and further tenant customer diversification. Turning to slide 20, again, some highlights for the quarter for the light industrial logistics sector, again with higher occupancy and positive reversions coming through with 26 new leases and a reversion rate, like I've said previously, of 6.1%. On slide 21, you can see the results of our active efforts to diversify across tenant customer base and trade sectors. The concentration risk from our top 10 tenant customers has been reduced substantially. These 10 contribute 33% of total headline rent, down from 41% at IPO, with the recent introduction of some major strong credit tenants into the top 10. With regard to our largest tenant customer, the Italian state agency, Agenzia Demanio, its contribution has been reduced to 13%, down from 20% at the IPO. As a reminder, these assets are spread over 9 separate locations through northern Italy, let to multiple administrations and largely leased to the end of 2024. Moving to slide 23, since listing, we have undertaken accretive acquisitions that we believe will benefit unit holders in the long run. In the fourth quarter, we acquired an asset located in the Colleoni Business Park in Agrate, Italy, situated within the province of Monza, located directly to the northeast of Milan, the largest economic district of Italy. The property has an attractive net initial yield of 7.3%, which compares favourably to the net initial yield of 5.8% of CREIT's existing office assets prior to this acquisition. We believe that the property, located in the Greater Milan metropolitan area, complements the current office portfolio of CREIT in Italy in terms of lease length term and will further enhance the stability of CREIT's portfolio's cash flows, bringing further diversification to its tenant customer base. On slide 24, you can see the overview of our proposed acquisition, previously announced, of 3 logistic assets located in the German state of Baden-Württemberg near Stuttgart, one of Germany's leading economic regions. Upon completion, the assets will be fully let to subsidiaries of the Fels Group, a global market leader in cold form steel technology and a leading manufacturer of machine tools and components, on a triple net lease with a term of 15 years with 100% index-linked lease agreements with no break clauses. This was Cromwell's first sale and leaseback transaction for the REIT, again unlocking value where more traditional institutional investors overlook. The assets will provide CREIT with predictable long-term cash flow with inflation escalators. We've spoken a little bit about the disposal, but I just wanted to highlight on page 25 that we continue to use our proprietary risk model to optimise the risk-return profile of the REIT. I'll now hand over to Shane, our CFO, to go through CREIT's financial report.
Thank you, Simon, and good morning. As Simon already mentioned, we have continued to outperform the key performance metrics on a year-on-year basis, and we've also again exceeded the IPO forecast. Gross revenue and net property income were both over 40% higher year on year at €177 million and €116 million respectively. The strong performance was driven by the income contributions from the newly acquired office assets and also from the favourable leasing performance in CREIT's light industrial logistics portfolio. Distributable income came in at €96.9 million, which was again, over 40% above the prior corresponding period and 38% above the IPO forecast. Even with an enlarged equity base, we announced a DPU of 4.08 cents, which is 8.8% above last year and 1.5% above the IPO forecast. On slide 28, there are 2 lineups of the key financial metrics for CREIT shown here, NPI and income available for distribution. and you can see there both have been steadily growing since listing, primarily due to the acquisitions that we've made, as well as from the growth in light industrial logistics that we've been speaking about. On slide 29, total return, including the fair value revaluations at year end, was also higher compared to last year. Fair value gains of about 42 million euros were recorded following the upward revaluation of CREIT's properties. As mentioned earlier, DPU at 4.08 cents is 1.5% above the forecast. And interestingly, the fourth quarter DPU was 1.03 cents, which is actually 3% above the third quarter DPU, as the full impact of the acquisitions in the third quarter kicked in. The return on contributed equity was about 8.6% above the current cost of equity. Turning to slide 30, we paid out a cumulative distribution of 2.05 cents for the period from the 1st of January to the 1st of July, and that was paid on the 31st of July. So the 1st of July was the day before the issue of the new units under the private placement. Therefore, for the second half, a DPU of 2.03 cents will be paid for the period from 2 July to the end of the financial year, and that will be paid out on the 30th of March. The currency election notice must be submitted by the 19th of March in order to elect euros for the distribution currency. The manager's performance fee in FY2019 is 1.95 million euros due to the 8.8% increase in DPU from 3.75 euro cents for the 12-month calendar period in 2018 to 4.08 cents in 2019. And this will be paid in units to be issued in the first quarter of this year. For FY20, the manager is proposing to maintain the distribution payout ratio at 100% of CREIT's annual distributable income, and is also considering changing the frequency of distributions to a quarterly basis, although we will complete a corporate simplification process first. Our preference is also to adopt semi-annual detailed financial reporting with quarterly updates to be provided for 1Q and 3Q. On slide 31, talking about a bit about the balance sheet, so net asset value grew by 17.5% to 1.3 billion euros at the end of last year from 1.1 billion euros the year before, mainly due to the acquisitions and the fair value gains. Net tangible assets per unit increased marginally to 51.6 euro cents due to the fair value gains, although partially offset by a 16.8% increase in the number of units in issue. Our liquidity position is ample, with cash standing at nearly 80 million euros at year end. Moving on to talk about capital management and treasury, on slide 33, we remain committed to responsible capital management. Aggregate leverage was less than 37% as at 31st of December, and this is well within the range of 35 to 40% set by the board, and well below the regulatory limit. And as Simon mentioned, almost 100% of our debt is actually hedged as at 31st of December, and we have locked this in at an all-in interest rate of less than 1.5% per annum. And interest coverage ratio remains one of the highest in the Singapore REIT market at almost 9 times due to the wide margin between our NPI and interest expense. On slide 34, in November last year, we executed a transformational debt refinancing of 625 million euros. We now have access to total debt facilities of around 1 billion euros, and this includes a new 150 million euro revolving credit facility, which is undrawn. This will allow us to facilitate unsecured financing in the future and potentially gain access to debt capital markets. Unsecured funding now makes up over 70% of our total debt, leaving less than 30% of assets unencumbered and equipping us with greater financial flexibility. Following the refinancing, CREIT has a weighted average term of debt of 3.4 years. After repayment of a short-term Polish loan facility, which is due this quarter, we will actually be, we will not have an expiry until the second half of 2021. I will now pass back to Simon to run through the European outlook and to leave you with the key takeaways.
Thanks, Shane. On slide 36, we highlight that there's been another great year of opportunities in the European market, with investment volumes reaching 110 billion euros, bringing the year's trading volume to 308 billion euros, similar to the record set in 2018. The European Central Bank's confirmation that the current low interest rate environment will continue, we believe that will also stimulate further investment into the real estate sector into 2020. Cross-border capital is very active in Europe, with significant capital inflows from continental Europe, as well as external investors such as the US and Canadians, and also from Asia. Offices remain a clear target for investors, accounting for 42% of trading volumes in the last quarter, while industrial sector continues to grow on the radar screens. Page 37 just highlights those capital flows. Turning to the capital values and risk premiums in Europe, European real estate offers the most attractive risk premiums and lower capital values of the major markets. For example, risk premiums are between 5 and 6% in Europe, but the premiums in Singapore and Hong Kong remain at only around 3% and 1% respectively. We also continue to benchmark our portfolio value versus replacement cost, with our rents in line or below market rates. Slide 39 shows the very healthy state of the occupancy in our key office markets. During the fourth quarter last year, office vacancies were the lowest in the CBD regions of Paris and Amsterdam at 1.4% and 1.6% respectively. The greater city districts also reflect attractive vacancy rates. The highest vacancy rate in the office markets that CREIT invests in was Warsaw CBD, which stands at only 5.3%. So rent prices in Paris CBD were naturally the highest in our markets at 880 euros per square metre, and the lowest of the rents in our markets is in Warsaw City Centre at 300 euros a square metre. A similar story can be shown on page 40 for the light industrial logistics sector. Vacancy rates were the lowest in Denmark, where rent prices are higher at 80 euros a square metre. Vacancy rates were higher in France at 7.1%, a still healthy level with supply constraints allowing vacancy to slowly reduce. Rental prices were the lowest across our regionals at 53 euros, although this belies the strength of the last mile Paris markets, where I have mentioned we are now achieving 150 euros a square metre. On the following slide, just a couple of quick comments on the European economy. It did have some modest momentum towards the end of 2019, but the pace of growth continues to be steady, with a growth of around 1% expected into 2020. The services sector has remained robust, but the main challenge we see here is that the contagion from the weakness in the export-orientated manufacturing sector could spread to this more resilient services sector. The external sector will remain under pressure given the persistent uncertainties and a weak global economy. Even after the signing of a Phase 1 trade agreement between Washington and Beijing, we see the threats of extra tariffs on European goods in retaliation for attacks on technology companies. Exports are expected to expand by roughly 1% in 2020, still a weak pace since the global financial crisis. Growth will thus almost entirely be driven by domestic demand from both private and government consumption and fixed investment. As a reminder, fixed investment, particularly in the gateway cities, enhances the value of the local real estate market by introducing new forms of transport and urbanification. The labour market continues to be one of the bright spots for the Eurozone economy, with unemployment rates continuing to reduce. This all adds up to fiscal and monetary policy stimulus remaining a political necessity, ensuring modest inflation and interest rates remain lower for longer.
Oxford Economics predict negative interest rates for the next 3 years in Europe, as shown on page 42. So in summary, we remain committed to stable and growing DPU. We are also actively exploring moving to quarterly distributions in FY20. We are pleased to have continued to outperform the IPO forecasts, achieving an NPI 37% higher than projected and a DPU 1.5% above the forecast. We believe NPI growth will continue organically through higher occupancy rates, inflation-linked rent increases, and positive rent reversions. We expect to supplement our growth by acquiring high-quality assets in strategic on-theme cities and markets across Europe. Through the successful debt refinancing, we have transformed our debt structure, securing longer-term debt duration, providing greater flexibility, all at a similar funding cost, and setting CREIT up for its next phase of growth. We expect FY2020 DPU to be at or above FY2019, barring unforeseen circumstances. We are aware this is an unusual practice in Singapore to provide this outlook comment, but we remain committed to transparency. We expect to maintain 100% payout ratio in our first year beyond prospectus forecasts, while the current management fee arrangements, where part of the fees are paid in units, is also expected to remain through FY2021. CREIT is now closer to major index inclusion based on high liquidity and free float market cap. So in summary, the team and I remain focused on our purpose of delivering stable and growing distributions and asset values for all unit holders through proactive and sustainable approach to asset and capital management, acquisitions and divestments. Thank you for your ongoing support, and I return the call back to Elena. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Simon. Thank you, Shane. Before I turn over the call to Aaron, just to highlight, we have given quite a lot of data points in the PowerPoint as well as in the financial statements. We can provide granular data on a property level upon request, so if we can focus on more strategic questions during the Q&A, that will be most appreciated. I hand over the phone now to Aaron. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now open the lines for questions from participants. If you wish to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on the telephone keypad and you'll be placed in the queue. To leave the queue, please press 02. If you're unable to pose a question, please reach out to Elena following this call. Our first question, Wai-Fei from UBS, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the call. It's Wai-Fei from UBS. I have a few questions. Firstly, you mentioned to potentially pay dividend quarterly, but what do you mean by corporate simplification program?
Yeah, good. Thank you for the question, and good morning. So at the time of the IPO, you recall we merged four separate portfolios to form the IPO. Those portfolios came with their in-place structure with various SPVs, holding companies. So we have over 80 holding companies of our various properties through Europe now, and we're looking to reduce that number. That will provide operating efficiencies. It will also allow further upstreaming of the cash more efficiently. As a reminder, our effective tax rate remains well below 10% in Europe.
Okay. My second question is on your office segment. The negative rent reversion seems to be widening on a sequential basis since the start of this year. Can you provide some color on the trend and outlook for 2020?
Yep, so at the 8 or 9 leases, it was only about 4,000 square metres. So again, the sample size continues to be quite low, but I take your point that at minus 1.5%, it is higher than what we reported 6 months ago. I'm not sure how else I could answer. I'm just looking at the leasing program for this current period. again, we expect to be around that zero to slightly flat.
Okay.
In part, it's to do with incentives. So where we had, where we've bought a property with cash flow, where we renew the lease, there is still 15 to 20% incentives in most markets.
Okay. And also for your REIT management fee, you mentioned that you're going to maintain it for 2020. But I noticed in Q4, the percentage was lowered to 90%. How did you arrive at this number?
Sorry, could you repeat?
REIT management fees in units. I think in Q4 it was 90% when I worked out the numbers.
There's a slight adjustment, but it's effectively 100%. It wouldn't be as low as 90%, but it's effectively 100%.
How was that adjustment made?
Maybe I could take that offline with you, Wi-Fi.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, but technically, the fees and units are still paid 100%.
Even for performance fees?
Yes, performance fee is 100% in units, yes.
Okay, that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question, Jason Yeo from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning. Thanks everyone for doing the call. I've got a few questions. Firstly, can you talk about some of the key areas of focus for C-REIT for this year?
So we're committed, obviously, to delivering the DPU to be at or above last year's DPU. That is our key focus, in line with our purpose. Having said that, there's still a number of opportunities that we believe in the logistics sector as well as gateway cities from an acquisition perspective, as well as continuing to look at our portfolio risk return metrics to identify any further assets that may potentially be recycled.
Okay, and just following on the acquisition front, which markets are looking interesting right now?
I think with the strength in e-commerce and growing infrastructure in transportation links in Germany, that still looks very attractive to us, as well as in Paris, the 36 billion euro grand infrastructure spend really is opening up the next ring, if you like, of Paris. So we continue to look around the River Seine to benefit from that pickup in urbanification.
Okay, just one last question. You've exceeded your 2019 occupancy target. How do you see occupancy levels for this year, particularly given the COVID-19 outbreak?
So our, I don't want to get into too much detail of what makes up our outlook comment, but we would expect occupancy to be around current levels.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question, David Lam from Daiwa Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Simon, I'm curious. You mentioned something about the Italian asset values being static, and you mentioned something like 1 year short of expiry. Is this related to the lease that will expire at the end of 2024?
That's correct. So as you get closer to a lease expiry, the valuers' cash flow forecasts from an NPV basis reduces the value slightly, offset by increasing the capital value or reducing the exit yield. as I'm not sure if you've seen, but there's been record interest in terms of investments in Milan in the last 12 months. And the lease take-up in that northern Italy space is also very strong. There was, I think, 500,000 square metres of new leases taken up in Milan in the last 12 months.
Okay, and I know it's still way out in the future, but when are you going to start to engage in the Italian state for the renewal?
So with all 950 tenants, we're constantly engaging and getting feedback. So our team, I think the best way of answering that is already engaged.
Okay. Yeah. Great. And finally, I know you're guiding for 100% payout this year, but what are your thoughts on the long term sustainable payout for the REIT, as well as the amount of management fees and units in the very long term?
So I think the best way of answering that question is, again, going back to first principles. The purpose of the REIT is to provide stable and growing DPU. So we have a number of levers for that, both organically and inorganically. So the board makes a decision each 6 months or potentially each quarter, if we move to quarterly distributions, with that guiding principle. To the extent that there's further growth in cash flows, then very long term, one may consider reducing slightly, but at this stage, that's not the intent.
Okay, great. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. There are currently no questions in queue. Once again, participants with questions to pose or to follow up, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad now. Our next follow-up question, Wi-Fi from UBS, please go ahead. Wi-Fi, can you unmute your line, please?
Oh, hi. Can I just check, are there any major leases up for renewal in 2020? Any leasing risk we should be aware of? And also, going back to the negative reversion in Q4, where was it coming from? Which country?
So the negative office reversion predominantly came in the Netherlands. In terms of major lease expiries, there's one in Haagseport to McDermott, which we're quite confident, based on our current discussions, of a positive resolution. There's a number of sort of 10 to 15,000 square metre leases in Paris in the logistics space, and again, we're very confident of releasing.
And on your positive revaluation, was there any cap rate compression?
Our net property yield declined slightly, sort of around 10 basis points, again, to reflect the improvement in our occupancy and what's referred to as ERV, which is, in Singapore language, the market rent estimate from the valuers.
Sorry, did you mention 20 basis points?
10 to 20 basis points, yeah.
Wi-Fi, also you may see in the slides about the office sector lease expiry profiles in 2020 and the fact that up to June 20, we've actually de-risked about 60% of them already.
And maybe one last question. End of last year, you recycled capital from non-core assets to higher quality buildings, but at a lower yield. So should we be expecting the same strategy going forward, whereby you upgrade the quality of your portfolio at the expense of yield dilution? And also, how much more of your portfolio do you think is considered non-core?
Yeah, so again, thank you for those questions. The sale of assets is one form of acquiring other assets. We've also raised equity, and we've also obviously used much lower cost of debt. So when you talk about a dilutionary program, which I think was the thrust of your question, as a reminder, we bought 365 million euros of assets at over a 7% yield. And that was funded, like you said, in part from the sale of assets, but also other capital options and opportunities. So we will continue to look at assets. It doesn't have to be high-yielding assets. We could look at disposing lower-yielding assets if we think that they've reached the peak of their risk-return profile. So I wouldn't necessarily say all assets that we sell are high-yielding. In fact, some may be low-yielding. So just watch this space.
And how much more do you think you can divest? Non-core.
Well, we don't. The management team does not have an AUM target in our KPIs. I think that's very important to restate. So any sort of buy, sell, hold decision is made in view of our DPU and NAV targets, not AUM targets. So, we review all of our assets every quarter with the board. There's no predetermined amount of assets that have to be bought or sold.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question, Sok Tio Hui from Skoda Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a question on incentives. Could you just comment a bit about the trend in incentives that you're seeing across the different segments as well as countries? Thank you.
Yeah, maybe we could take that offline because we're in seven countries in about, I want to say about 35 different markets. But if I make a general comment, in logistics, we continue to see very low levels of incentives, again, going back to the charts reflecting the low market vacancies. So we may be averaging somewhere between 1 to 3 month rent-free period for, let's call it an average 5-year lease. And for office markets, we're in that sort of 15 to 20% range. With Warsaw probably being higher, there's more supply in Warsaw, so we're probably at the 30-35% mark in that sort of range in Warsaw.
And do you see that changing in light of the current macro weakness that is evolving?
Yeah, I think that's why we wanted to demonstrate to you that the state of the office markets it does not reflect that view of the European economy. We're talking about 1.5% vacancy in our key office markets. So the trend we're seeing is actually a reduction in incentives as there's less alternatives for sitting tenants to move to. Remember, in Europe, it's quite difficult to get developments, and in fact, it's getting harder to get developments approved because of environmental issues that the European Union has adopted. So, for example, logistics in Netherlands has just had a nitrogen test to the construction of new sheds, which is now seeing a lot of new sheds not being approved. For the older stock that is vacant, we're seeing councils wanting to reconvert those assets into higher and better use, such as student accommodation or other mixed-use options. So it's actually quite a contrast between the macro and what's actually happening at the property level. And you can see that with, again, another stat. The Paris office market saw 2.2 million square metres of new development, which was leased in 2019. So a lot of leasing activity continues.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question, Derek from DBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for the call. Just wondering, for your will, could you give us a sense if you have a buffer between passing and market rents for leases expiring in this financial year and the next financial year. Could you, do you mind just give us a broad comment on that?
Thanks for the question, Derek. So refer to my pre-prepared remarks that we believe our passing rent is very close to market rent or ERV.
If you could split it between office and industrial, is it similar?
Well, I think, again, when you see our rent reversion of 6 to 10%, 6 to 11% that we reported for each quarter in industrial, I would suggest that logistics continues to be the driver of the growth.
Okay. Okay. My next question will be on occupancy. Do you mind if you do talk a little bit about the occupancy, especially in France and Denmark, especially for your like industrial and logistics? And there's been some improvement Q1Q, but just wondering whether are you hitting that frictional level or you expect occupancy to be able to hit higher towards the other cities in, for example, Netherlands and Italy, where it's close to 100%.
Yeah, I don't think the portfolio will get to 100%. I think just the nature of 1.5 million square meters, there'll always be, you know, some element of tenant churn where, you know, tenant wants more space and we can't find it for them in that particular location. So I certainly wouldn't model or factor in much more of an increase in occupancy as a general statement. In terms of a specific question on Denmark, we reported a year ago quite a disappointing result. We changed the asset management team on the ground. Cromwell added a lot more resources and you know, recommenced a major leasing campaign, and we've seen the benefit of that come through, particularly in the second half of last year. And we have pretty good momentum in Denmark going into this year, having seen a number of the leases that the team have been putting in place. So I would expect a slight improvement in Denmark.
I see. Okay. Last question. I know it's been asked a few times, but just wondering if you look at acquisitions for 2020, if you were to look at it from a, say, real estate segment between office, industrial, logistics, at this point in time, would you want to wait more in office or in industrial in 2020 in view on how the macro environment has been changing?
That's only one part of our decision-making process. You know, we use a combination of both macro and sort of top-down metrics, you know, in line with one of your question. But there's also a very significant element of bottom-up when it comes to sourcing assets. So we don't go into the year, you know, with any sort of predisposition towards, you know, 60% office, 35% logistics. Having said that, we find both markets attractive and we'll continue to seek acquisitions both in logistics and in office, particularly in gateway cities, in the office markets, and particularly in Germany from a logistics perspective.
I see. Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question, Pali Yap from East Spring Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for this session, and thank you for the very comprehensive slides, and congratulations for a very good set of results. I wanted to ask about the Italy assets, the long WALE assets, which is not that long now. It's up to 2024, as you mentioned. Could you and I know, Simon, you talked about the valuations. So do we assume that going forward, as the lease shortens, that valuation will continue to compress, and based on what the valuers are representing, how much do you think, you know, assuming all things equal, how much do you think that compression could be?
Thanks, Pearlie, for your comments and question. The team obviously takes your and other investors' feedback, you know, with a lot of appreciation. So thank you. Just as a reminder, our Italian office portfolio valuation went up; it didn't go down. That's the first comment I want to make. In terms of lease extensions, Cromwell Group has had very long history of negotiating with various governments. So in Australia, for example, it's the largest owner of Canberra from a listed perspective. So again, a lot of experience with dealing with the government. We're talking about 9 properties spread throughout northern Italy. I can say that all of the buildings are occupied almost fully from the subtenants and all the different departments of the government. So we certainly are very optimistic in our expectations of releasing the space to either the sitting tenants or new government departments, or indeed there's a couple of assets that offer the opportunity for higher and better use. So that's also something that we're exploring.
Okay, so there would be, because of the land there and some of these campuses are, you know, quite dated assets, if you don't mind me saying. So you think that there would be possibility of looking to redevelop some of these assets, yes?
Yeah, that's certainly the options that we're showing to the Italian government, that if they don't renew the lease, that we have opportunities to do other things with the asset. That's correct. In terms of the campus...
Is there a chance that those leases could... I mean, I know it's 3 years down the road, but is there a chance that the rentals could also change? I mean, inflation has been very low throughout Europe.
Yeah, so in Italy, inflation's running around 0.5%. Just to go back onto your comment on the campus, just to remind people that our campus is in the books for around 80 million euros, and it cost the government 200 million euros to build. I don't want to get into further details on lease discussions, because they're obviously ongoing, Pearly, and so I think it's best if we leave our comments at that sort of general level.
Okay, understand. The other thing I wanted to ask was with relations to the exposure to, you mentioned, you know, some of very small impact from COVID, but obviously export sectors have been impacted. Are you in any way, when you run through your tenants, are there any that, you know, could face some short-term difficulty? Any concerns about that? Or do you think that, you know, the exposures are too small to worry about?
Our hearts and thoughts and prayers are with everyone on this virus. I was actually in Europe a couple of weeks ago, and we've been in very active dialogue. One of the advantages of being the Asian REIT in Europe is that we were able to alert our property managers what was coming, given the experience that we've had with SARS here that hasn't, you know, Europe hasn't had to deal with the virus since the Spanish flu, over 100 years ago. So certainly we're very well prepared as a management team. In terms of specific properties, we do have a small hotel near the Malpensa Airport. To remind everyone, that's a lease, an operating lease. We're secured from a leasing perspective. But that represents less than 1% of the income.
And lastly, my question on Warsaw. Do you see that as an area where you would continue to increase your exposure to? And do you see that there is opportunity there? Although I do note that, as you mentioned, the incentives are quite high. I'm not sure what the trend on the incentives are.
Yeah, sure. So look... we've got a number of assets in Warsaw, but we've also been diversifying into the other major cities in Poland, such as Gdańsk and Krakow, recently Poznan, where the yields are even higher than Warsaw. So to remind people, if average cap rates in West Germany are around 3.5%, we're able to buy properties in Warsaw, which is, very close to Berlin at sort of 6%. So we think the yield spread is very attractive. And then going to the second-tier cities in Poland, we get another 100 basis points thereabout pickup in yield. Yet our cost of debt is exactly the same at less than 1.5%. So we have a strategy that was in the prospectus of retaining at least a 75% weighting to Western Europe, So investors should have comfort that while we're attracted to Central Europe, there is a cap to our exposure. We're currently, I think, 12 or 13% exposed to Central Europe at this stage. But the economic growth in Central Europe is substantially higher than that of Western Europe, so there really is a risk-return trade-off. I think it's fair to say that we're very happy with our investment in Poland, and that particularly our Polish team continue to manage those assets exceptionally well.
And what is the availability of, you know, developable land and new supply coming out in Central Europe?
So
as Western Europe, as you mentioned, you know, environmental rules and so on in Western Europe could be very high.
Yeah.
What would be like in Central?
Yeah, that's still very. I mean, as part of the EU, Poland still, is part of any of the EU environmental laws. So that's the first point. Second point, because of the growth of the economy and the take-up of office space. So, for example, Warsaw last year saw 800,000 square metres of new space take-up. So we continue to expect more supply. Again, the demand is there. I mean, we're talking, 5.5% office vacancy. That still is very low, and so therefore there may be supply, but it's being matched by demand.
And the quality of the build by different developers, is it very variant, or do you see that, you know, everyone's pretty much good international standard properties with these new supplies coming out?
So I'd really like to take investors to Warsaw and Gdansk and Krakow.
Yep.
Because you will be amazed at the technology. And in fact, the technology in buildings and infrastructure potentially is higher than that of Western Europe, because it's all new infrastructure. Right. So Poland effectively has only been out of communism for 20 years, and it's receiving, along with a couple of the other Central European countries, a substantial contribution from Western Europe to fixed investments. So it's one of the growth aspects of Europe has been driven by fixed investment. You know, it's a leader in prop tech. It's as educated a population as Germany. I'd really encourage people to come with us to Poland. Lena is trying to set up a tour in a couple of months' time, so please reach out to her, subject to the COVID virus, of course. But there's certainly an opportunity this year to take investors and analysts to see some of these markets.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pearlie.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're unable to pose a question, please reach out to Elena following this call. I will now hand the session over to Elena for closing comment.
Thank you very much, everyone. We are 10 minutes over our limited time. As Aaron said, if you have any follow-up questions, you want to talk to management, as you know, we are easily reached. So please drop me an email, and thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.